because we don't have, we're running out of time. With respect to Egypt, I'll just talk about, so today we're just going to be discussing the history. We'll not get to what's happening today. With respect to Egypt, the leader of this madhab was basically Muhammad Abdul. Well, Muhammad Abdul was a very close friend of the ruler, of the English ruler, Lloyd Cromer. Well, Muhammad Abdul was a very strong admirer of the European civilization. He loved Europe very much. And he said, any time I feel depressed or bad when I'm in Egypt, I just go to Europe and it revives my soul. He loved to see Europe and the Europeans so much. And he said that the only hope for the Egyptians, was to follow the practice and follow the way of the Europeans. And in 1899, because of the British, he was appointed the Mufti of Egypt. While this position, of course, he was able to make to really control the way of thinking and what was going on. Even he had the right to remove people from Al-Azhar. Basically, his aim, and again, we're not talking about his intention, whether his intention was good or bad, whether he understood Islam, didn't he? It's not important. It's not what I'm talking about. But by what he did, by his writings, we see that basically his aim, his goal, was to interpret the Sharia in such a way and to free it from the old interpretations of the earlier scholars, and to prove that Islam and modern Western civilization, were compatible. Two of his best-known fatawa, one of them said that it is halal, or it is legal to make pictures and statues for the Muslims as long as there is no shirk. This fatwa, actually, nowadays we're still living under the influence of this fatwa. Before Muhammad Abdul, you don't find this fatwa. Even two-dimensional pictures were considered haram by the ulama. And that's why when he gave this fatwa, he was opposed by almost all of the ulama at that time. And also, he also said that it is halal for Muslims to put their money in the European banks and to get interest. And he also said that it is permissible for Muslims to wear Western clothing. And that was the introduction of pants and these Western style clothing into Egypt. He was also, at the same time, he was convinced of the supremacy of Aql. He said Aql sits in judgment of deen. And it is Aql who decides what is right and what is wrong in the deen. And also, of course, he had to read this modern science into the Quran. So, for example, about the jinn, he said that the ulama of old, they used to say that the jinn are living bodies which cannot be seen. He says, but it is permissible to assert that the minute living bodies only recently discovered by means of the microscope and called microbes may well be defined as the jinn. And he is saying that jinn are microbes. This was just recently, he could not see it until he had the microscope. That's his only justification, for saying that jinn are, not just with respect to physical science, but also he says, that we have to adopt the social sciences of the West. And even he tries to prove again that Darwin's theory was compatible, with the Quran. Why you don't think the other one? You don't have much time. If you want to ask, you can ask.
Allah Akbar, Allah Akbar. Allah.
Actually, Faisal was very tough for me to finish before the event. That's why I'm trying to finish before the time of the event. And to conclude about Muhammad Abdul, and probably one of the best conclusion that we can say about him is something that the English ruler Lloyd Cromer wrote about Muhammad Abdul. And Muhammad Abdul, by the way, he was put in prison for some time. So Lord Cromer said that under British pressure, the ruler pardoned him and then made him a judge. And Abdul recognized the necessity of European assistance in the work of reform. Then he said, Yani, that he founded a school of thought in Egypt which is similar to that established in India by Sir Syed Ahmed Khan. And their task is therefore one of great difficulty, and they deserve all the encouragement and support which we can give them. They are the natural allies of the European reformers. And Muhammad Abdul Aziz was used basically by the Europeans to try to spread his version of Islam in Egypt at that time. Muhammad Abdul, of course, was very influential. Included among his students were Qasim Amin, the one who wrote. Actually, it was his first book. Actually, it was Muhammad Abdul who wrote it, probably, but Qasim Amin put his name on it. Well, they wrote it together, at least at the minimum. Well, Ali Abdul Razak, who was a complete secularist, he said, Islam has nothing to do with government. Well, Taha Hussein, Muhammad Rashid Reza. These were the students of Muhammad Abdul that passed on some of his thoughts. Muhammad, with respect to Muhammad Rashid Reza, after some time then he began to realize that in fact what Muhammad Abdul was teaching was wrong. And he began long after Muhammad Abdul died, he began to criticize his work and point out some of his mistakes. But that laid really the groundwork. Those scholars, Muhammad Abdul, the students of Muhammad Abdul, and the students of Sir Syed Ahmed Khan, these are the teachers of the present day modernists. But we do not have time, to go into the situation of the present day modernists. What influence they are, what role they're playing today. So I think, just dealing with the history of the modernist school will be sufficient for today, and then we'll open the floor now for any questions or comments that you may have. So now that we're finished, we can give a title to this. This is the history of the modernist movement before the present time. That's the title of this session. So on the tape, you can go back. Yeah, Muhammad Abdul is not very controversial. Jamal Abdul Afghani, that's a different story. This is one of the reasons why I can't speak to it. But Muhammad Abdul is very clear. There's no real controversy over Muhammad Abdul. What do you mean, the next in this series? Okay. The next lecture in this series is the situation of this movement at this time. Now, what are they propagating today? Obviously, since they're modernists, they cannot propagate the same thing that they propagated 100 years ago. They have to change. They have to keep up with the time. So the next one is what are they doing today, and also their influence in the Muslim world, especially in the United States. I think when I originally prepared these lectures, it was for mixed American and foreign audience, so I have quite a bit here about their role in the United States today.
First of all, I have to say that it's not a big mistake not to get the title during the
Khutbah. Actually, Mr. Ahmed Jabbar, since he's here, he's supposed to get the fifth night. But he refused.
I wonder nowadays Muhammad Abdul is like an idol for a lot of people. But the way that he said things, I would assume that there was a lot of opposition.
Yes.
How come this opposition is not really known, but not popular?
And who opposed him?
Who opposed him? I would assume that there were a lot of people in the hospital.
Yeah. And there were people like Shakir and his son. I keep forgetting who was the father. Ahmed Shakir is the father, and then Ahmed and Mahmoud is his two sons.
محمد شاكر الزفار. أحمد شاكر الزفار. طيب أحمد شاكر فوز يعني very يعني hard in a very difficult and in a very in a harsh way. Also عبد الرحمن السعدي which is حسن البنا الصالح also فوز فوز. يعني but the why you know Muhammad Abduh and you don't know the others because Muhammad Abduh had the backing of the English government, the Egyptian government, and the ruling, yani the upper class. Okay, people like, yani the people who were dominating the media or what were popular in the city, and they were all people who were Muhammad Abduh's followers. Yani Sa'd Zaghlul and his wife, yani opened a bunch of yani salons for people to come and sit and talk and. Yani they so he had the government backing, both the British and the Egyptian government, and he also had yani the backing of the upper class. So yani the upper class that time they used to travel to Europe and come back and so forth. So therefore yani that's why basically you hear one side of the story, and those yani who opposed him who didn't really have except for maybe four people following them, and it was the case everywhere. Yeah, also he opposed him. And you can find these people who opposed him. Many of them were writers. Many of them are famous. Yeah, but because of his influence and his situation, they were kind of drowned out by it. Even Muhammad Rashid Rida, if you read his later writings, he opposed him. But if you ask anyone, who is Muhammad Rashid Rida? Is the best student in Muhammad Abduh. He wrote yani Tariq al-Imam and so forth, yani the life history of Muhammad Abduh. So yani the what you may hear may not necessarily yani represent what was actually going on. Also, for example, Jamaluddin al-Afghani was opposed by many people. Similar situation from him, yani concerning him. Now Jamaluddin al-Afghani is he's the one where you can't tell what's true and what's false. His life is really confusing. And also, because he was so influential, anyone who came after him with any idea, he says, I got this idea from Jamaluddin al-Afghani. He's my teacher, he's the one who taught me this. He wants to give some authority to what you're saying. At that time, you say, well, this is what al-Afghani told me. So people were claiming many things that this is al-Afghani's teaching. Some of them were not true. But even his own personal life, and for example, you hear a lot that he was a pan-Islamist, and he's saying that the Muslim countries should all get together and rise against the West. Actually, he never taught that. And he taught that the Eastern countries, Muslim and non-Muslim, should rise against the rule. Walaykum salam. Should rise against the rule of the French and the Dutch. He never mentioned English. For some reason. Actually, it was the English who he was supposed to be killed in Russia. By the way, he believed in assassination as a way of, he was, I guess, the first terrorist in the Muslim world. And he believed in assassination. And he tried to assassinate the ruler of Iran. He was captured in Russia and he was supposed to be put to death. And it was the British government who came and arrested him. So he didn't say it's next week.
No.
He didn't say that. He didn't say it's next week.
Come on. No,
people don't read what they actually want. You know, they just hear about these people. Al-Afghani was a great leader. Many people, they think I named myself after Jamaluddin al-Afghani. can. Everyone has to know the name is Hazrat
Jamal Ali. Because we don't see any thing coming from Muslim leaders, Muslim ulama.
That's the problem. Of even the ones alive today, and some of them are considered the leading, for example, in the United States, some of them are considered the leading scholars and callers to Islam. But if you actually look at some of the fatwa, some of the things that they wrote and said, you would not believe that this came from those people.
You mentioned in the beginning of your lecture that this is a new movement. Is that
true? I said it's very old, actually.
Yeah, but no, you said that.
Yeah, it is reappearing.
Right.
Since the turn of the century,
right.
It has reappeared under the influence of the European modern.
Same form.
Hey, it's basically putting an apple first.
So now you're going to move to the new people.
Yes. Yeah, this is just development. As I said, the students of these people that I mentioned some of the students, they are the teachers of the ones around today.
And that is because the West is seeing that maybe there's also the Ahl Sunnah now coming up, and that's why maybe they are trying to support these groups, or is it just...
It's in their interest, and regardless of whether there's a revival among Ahl Sunnah or not, it's in the interest for people to think of themselves as Muslims and be following the way of Europe.
I think they can put more effort if they
feel. Come on. But even if that is, and during the time of Muhammad Abdul, it wasn't very strong.
Right.
And he seems to be actually in a very bad effort. You might have been Lepotomy in Syria, Damascus, to be more specific. And he was one of those reformers at the same time who looked at things differently. He said, look, we have lots of problems. But the solution is not falling in the West completely. The solution is going back to the Quran and Sunnah. And the situation in the Muslim world was very bad at that time, from an Islamic point of view. But even though it was bad, and really the Muslims weren't doing anything, they still had Muhammad Abdul and these people who supported them and tried to spread this.
Okay, the question is, one conclusion from this speech is that he cannot use his mind.
Oh, okay, we'll get to that. We'll get to the position of Atul Yani in Islam.
Yeah, if something is not against the Quran and Sunnah,
yeah.
I think it's okay. And who was talking about that?
Yeah.
He said, I'm not going to talk about, if you wear a short, in back, or, make it longer, because this is just how to appear. But if you appear inside as a good Muslim, it is much better than you take care of if you wear a bath or if you wear pants and chairs, So, if these came out of scholars, you are talking about doing something from Western or from the United States or anything. It's not against the Sharia and Sunnah.
Now the problem is that what they're saying is against the Quran.
Some of them. You said you mentioned some of them when you were talking about jinn or something like that. But you also mentioned even the new method of wearing pants and chairs to the other countries. So
because it's haram to wear and divert to kufar.
Yeah, who said
had a hadith, and you cannot appear like the kufar. What do you mean? It's hadith of the Prophet.
Well,
so at that time, if someone is wearing any specific dress, you know that he's European and he's non-Muslim. And you know both of these things. And you have a libas of kufar. Someone wears that, you know that he's Catholic. Okay? That's the situation in Egypt at that time. So
if you wear a pants and chair, don't you be like a Kafir? No. Okay.
If the Prophet prohibited us to dress like the Kufar, and he said whoever appears like a people, he's one of them. Okay?
During the time of the Prophet Muhammad they wear pants and shirts.
And the point is that there's a dress. If there's a dress, if there's a dress which is known to be the dress of the kufar, you cannot wear it.
Yeah, I know. That's
okay. So in Egypt at that time, the pants and suits were known to be the dress of the kufar. Well, Muhammad Abdul said, "You may wear it. There's no problem with it."
but this means the way he's saying this, it means that he intended to do that. He intended for the Muslim people to imitate the
yes, he did.
But I don't think he means that because
no, his writings are very clear that the Muslims must follow the Europeans in both their aqidah, in their akhlaq, in their physical sciences, in their material science, yani their aqidah about the world, yani not leaving the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, but their yani belief about the world, the place of aql, yani philosophy. Yani he said these things very clearly, there's no question about it. Yani that for the Egyptians to become civilized, he wasn't talking about Muslims generally, he said for the Egyptians to become civilized, they have to follow the way of the Europeans, including yani akhlaq. Fatim Amin was even more.
Yeah,
Fatim Amin, yani his book was actually written by Muhammad Abdul. This was Muhammad Abdul's writing, yani him and Fatim Amin.
The only thing that I'm not convinced about is something is not existing in the era of Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. The duality, yani what we used to, even the scholars, you try to find, you know, like, and you find it to study, you know, because you cannot find it in this
No one disagrees with you, Rani, on this point.
Yeah. So now we have Bart. We don't have Bart at the time of the Prophet Muhammad. Now we have Grant and Chase, who don't have that at that time. So people, they have to decide, they have to have a lot of experience in a lot of reading about these books and Sharia and all that, and then
that's no problem. But to accept something, yani, if it goes against the Quran and Sunnah, so
okay,
you,
yeah,
and just because it's the way of some other people and you're going to put that first, this is wrong.
Yeah.
Is that
what you did?
Allah.